The new Midwestern Regional Rail Plan includes hourly passenger trains through Bloomington Normal and 200-mile-per-hour service. An advocate for high-speed rail says he's pleased the blueprint treats the region like a network instead of separate routes. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington Mayor Mboka Mwilambwe says there are misconceptions about the process for filling that Ward 6 vacancy.
It's not just about the ward, you know, it's not just about Ward 6. You kind of have to take a number of things into consideration.
A conversation about representation as the October 30th deadline looms. And a former head of the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity takes us behind the curtain to see how the state lured Rivian to the Twin Cities. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal news update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. An advocate for passenger rail travel says the new Midwestern Regional Rail Plan is a wonderful four-decade vision for the transportation network in the region. 12 states, the Federal Railroad Administration, and various stakeholder groups have announced the blueprint to coordinate infrastructure investments over the next generation. Rick Harnish is the director of the High Speed Rail Alliance. He says the virtue of the plan is it treats the region as a rail system, not as separate routes.
I like how aggressive the plan is in proposing incredibly high frequencies on the core routes like Chicago to St. Paul, Chicago to Detroit, Chicago to St. Louis, etc. This is really what we should have started working on 20, 30 years ago.
Why does frequency matter so much?
Well, you know, you can get on your car whenever you want. Supposing you can drive, you need to get to at least hourly before it becomes really effective with taking public transit.
It doesn't get quite that good on the Chicago to St. Louis corridor.
Not today. It should be. And what they're proposing in the FRA framework, it would be somewhere between 16 and 25 trains a day. So that's hourly service.
Will it be true high-speed rail?
That's what the framework is suggesting, yes, for Chicago to St. Paul, Chicago to St. Louis, Detroit, Columbus, and Louisville, Indianapolis, Louisville, and Nashville.
Any prospect of even more than 110 miles an hour?
So the travel times that they are talking about in this FRA plan require going 200 miles an hour.
How can we get there? That will require a whole bunch of things. What are they?
The simplest is that the state of Illinois needs to commit to doing it. And then there have been multiple studies that show that it is physically feasible, and it could be done in large parts alongside existing interstate highways. It's a matter of the state making the commitment to do it.
And what's the price tag?
A fraction of building Interstate 55 from scratch. So in terms of the impact that we're having on communities today, having a huge burden on maintaining their existing highway infrastructure, this would put a lot more people on trains, which means a lot more people coming without bringing their car. It's a very important investment.
The plan also includes the possibility of more commuter rail kinds of things linking, say, the Quad Cities, Peoria, Galesburg, and on to Bloomington Normals, as much as the interurban did between Peoria and Bloomington and Bloomington and Springfield back in the early part of the last century. Haven't seen that sort of thing in a long time. Is that likely to become reality?
This is an opportunity for local communities to get engaged and excited in making an integrated network happen. It should be just a matter of course that you can take a train, perhaps a connecting bus, to and from all of the kind of clusters of cities in Illinois, Springfield, Decatur, Champaign-Urbana, Bloomington-Normal, Peoria, Galesburg, the Quad Cities, St. Louis, East St. Louis, Chicago. You should be able to get around those, between all of those cities easily and conveniently without a car, but it's going to take the local communities really getting invested in making it happen.
What needs to be a commitment from, say, the town of Normal or the city of Bloomington? What size of commitment investment are we talking about?
This is about creating a coalition of the leaders in these cities to create a true state program on par with the state highway program to really ramp up our local transit agencies, the existing Greyhound and Burlington buses, Amtrak, and fill in the missing gaps and make it a lot faster and a lot more frequent.
Have we been here before? Great plans or plans that sound compelling founder on a change in administration after they're initially generated?
So we keep getting closer and closer. And it's not a straight line up, but it's a curvy line up. So we are much farther along than we were 10 years ago. We're not moving as quickly as we need to by any means. But again, that's a matter of the local communities making it clear that this is something important to them.
Quantify the progress in the last 10 years in the Chicago to St. Louis corridor, for instance.
Well, on the Chicago to St. Louis corridor, when I first started this job, if it rained, the trains had to slow down to 10 miles an hour. Frequently, the grade crossings wouldn't work, so the trains had to stop and make sure that people knew the train was there before the train went across the highway. The tracks were rough. It was bad. So today, we've got a world-class railroad. We've got all new stations. A lot of the communities got new road improvements. Grade crossings are much safer. And we're much better off than we were 10 years ago. And that's very exciting. Again, we've got more to do, but it's been huge progress.
Is this vision likely to founder upon the U.S. Senate?
The key is, just as this needs to be a statewide program, we need a federal program that serves all states. And, you know, the rural communities of Montana are really struggling to stay connected to the economy. And so there's a string of them that's currently, they don't have Amtrak service today. They've currently banded together to push for Amtrak service to their communities. There's groups like that all across the country. And that's what we really need to make this successful, is a truly national program, not high-speed rail everywhere, but a mix of things, much better bus service, better Amtrak service, and high-speed rail mixing, depending upon the locale.
Rick Harnish is the director of the High Speed Rail Alliance. That's a nationwide advocacy group based in Chicago. Harnish says the next step is for communities such as Bloomington Normal, Pontiac, Dwight, and so on to tell the state five trains a day on the Chicago to St. Louis route is not enough, that it needs to be 8 or 10. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org.
An Indiana ball bearing factory closed in 2017, its jobs sent to Mexico.
I really wanted to know what it felt like to be told that your job is disappearing because these people over here are going to do it cheaper.
Which is why a journalist followed three workers for years after the closing. Their stories on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
I'm Ariel Jones. Listen weekdays from 4 till 9 a.m. on 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Residents in Ward 6 on Bloomington's west side have been without representation on the city council since September 1st, when former council member Jen Carrillo resigned. Finding their successor has taken longer than expected. In this interview with Ryan Denham, Mayor Mboka Mwilambwe says he's still working on it.
My goal was to try to find someone, you know, who could achieve the broadest amount of consensus. Not only with the council, but also with members of the community. One of the misconceptions about the position, in my opinion, is that it's not just about the ward. You know, it's not just about Ward 6. You kind of have to take a number of things into consideration. So if you think about it, you know, would I have liked to have somebody there, you know, from day one on September 1st? Sure. But it's definitely, you've seen that in past years, you know, different appointments, you know, it can take a little bit of time. That's why we do have 60 days, you know, for me to make an appointment.
Do you think that it taking so long has harmed West Side residents in some way? You know, essentially not having them have a voice on the council during, you know, some pretty key decisions, you know, especially about flooding and other stuff.
Well, I wish we didn't. It's just the nature of the process. You know, I'm working hard. I'm trying the best I can, because I think about the residents of the ward, and I'd like for them to have some representation as soon as possible.
Are you still considering Karen Schmidt for the vacancy?
You know, one of the things that, Ryan, I committed to is to not talk about candidates generally, because I don't want to have any, I don't want that to lead to, you know, undue speculation. When it comes to, you know, to Karen Schmidt, you know, what I would say is that, you know, this wasn't necessarily something that, you know, Karen was looking to do. People reached out to her and then also reached out to me, you know, seeing that, you know, we weren't making any progress on an appointment, and said, what if, have you considered? You know, and that was really the end of it. And that's why I posed the question to the council.
Related to council member Jeff Crable specifically, he said that it in his view, in his read on this, is that you're trying to appease what he calls the three conservatives on the council, who have made it clear, in his words, that they have refused to vote for any progressive appointee to this ward seat. Mm-hmm. What is your response to that?
My response to that is that it's his opinion, and he's entitled to it. Because if let's say, you know, you've heard some people, you know, express concern about Karen Schmidt. So if I said, okay, I'm not going to appoint her, so would that be appeasing them? Councilmember Crabill has made it clear that he wasn't in support of Karen Schmidt. So would that be considered as appeasing him? I don't know. You know, so I really don't want to get into these kinds of things. What I'm mainly focused on is really the health of the council over the long term, so that we can find a way to, you know, to work together very well. And make the decisions that the public, you know, expects us to make, you know, for the benefit of the community.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham, speaking with Mayor Mboka Milamwe. A couple of weeks ago, Mayor, Bloomington Public Library leaders came back to the City Council with their latest proposals for an expansion project. And there were a couple of different versions, you know, between $20 and $22 million. What do you think of the current iteration of the library's expansion plans?
Yeah, I was very pleased with it. As you know, the library is something that's been discussed for quite a while. So I you know, and we've had a number of iterations, you know, we'll have a branch over on the east side, you know, or, oh, do a catalyst project, you know, on with the Market Street Garage, and then eventually expansion here on site. And even as we talked about the expansion, I felt the previous plans that were presented were a little bit too ambitious. And this particular plan, I think, you know, provides, you know, I think the kind of, you know, footprint that would allow the library to expand some of its programs, because they really are at capacity. But at the same time, it is also a much more affordable option, and it makes it's a very attractive project.
That's Bloomington Mayor Mboka Mwilambwe speaking with Ryan Denham. The City Council is expected to take votes on financing the library next month. Construction could start in April of 2022.
Thank you to the entire community that came together to support WGLT and NPR during our fall fund drive.
It's just a really neat way to feel really connected with our community.
We've hit the $75,000 goal. Your investment in WGLT means we can fund your favorite national programs and a local newsroom. We are proud to be powered by and to serve this community. If you ran out of time or forgot to give, donations are always welcome at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. As Central Illinois waits to hear whether Samsung will build an electric vehicle battery plant in Bloomington Normal, let's look back at how talks to land another big company went. Jim Schultz was the Director of Commerce and Economic Opportunity in the Rauner administration. Schultz says Rivian was not a sure thing for the state to offer economic incentives to lure. EVs, even 4 years ago, weren't viewed the same way they are now as a key part of the future. But Schultz says a startup company was certainly better than the plant being auctioned off for scrap metal, which was about to happen. He takes us behind the curtain.
You know, I'll say it's classic 101. We, you know, they expressed interest. We brought them into Bloomington for a plant tour, went through several additional time conference calls. We didn't use Zoom at the time, additional conference calls, and then went to a letter of intent stage where they made a proposal to acquire the facility subject to our providing tax credits and subject to the seller unwinding the potential sale to the scrap metal buyer.
What is the bargaining like?
The process involves several layers of individuals. The Department of Commerce and the state of Illinois has a lot of seasoned professionals. And so the people involved with workforce development were engaged in discussions. The people that work on the tax credit, of course, were involved in discussion. And then we looked at other incentives. So there were kind of three different divisions within the Department of Commerce looking at how we could provide the right tools for Rivian to make the decision to locate in Illinois. I want to go back real quick, Charlie, on the workforce issue. That was something we led with. Even in my trade missions overseas, I always led with workforce in Illinois and the fact that we had, in my opinion, the best workforce in the U.S., if not the world. And that, I think, was also a very compelling part of Rivian's, compelling argument in Rivian's decision.
At the end of the day, you have all these stakeholders. How complicated is it to get everybody moving in the same direction and ending up at a certain point at the same time?
I would suggest it's not that complicated, particularly when you have a dire situation like we did with the Mitsubishi plant.
People like me always want to, if not second guess, at least dive into the balance of incentive versus job creation versus average wage. How should that be looked at for the public to determine whether a deal is worth it?
My belief is that you have to have something in your toolbox to be able to attract and retain companies. It's a very competitive space. Many states, particularly some in the South and Southeast, are very aggressive in trying to recruit companies to relocate to their state or to locate to their state. They, in many cases, have more tools than we do in the state of Illinois. I think that the tax credit program for job creation is the most powerful one and the most important one. There's a lot of people that argue that it has to be a certain wage level. And I think that's disingenuous to the person who doesn't have technical skills and may be at a lower wage level and maybe is only capable of earning $30,000 or $40,000 a year. We need to give those opportunities as well. And so when I ran the EDGE tax program for Governor Rauner's administration, my focus was not on the dollar amount that the company was going to provide on an average wage base. It was, do we have the workforce that can address the work needs of this organization? And is it an opportunity where we can put people with lacking skills or underskilled and get them into a position where they can get better training and more skills that will make them kind of pull themselves up by their own bootstraps?
What are those conversations like with CEOs and with higher ups who are looking to craft a deal from a company?
Well, you know, I think it goes back to some of the things we touched upon earlier and discussion about, you know, why would they look at Illinois perhaps over other states without, you know, competing against the other states on a direct basis, you know, calling out a state, but talking about the advantages of Illinois, the electricity rates, the transportation logistics capabilities. We were promoting those and talking a lot about those and the capability of a company to look at this more than just at on the numbers, but look at numbers plus the intangibles like the workforce. The logistics thing is a huge, huge issue that a lot of companies don't think about as they're looking at locating a plant. We have seven class one rails that pass through Illinois, the only place in the country that happens. One of the things, Charlie, that I did frequently and just talked what I said, the five R's of Illinois, our competitive advantage, I called it rails, roads, runways, rivers, and routers. If you're going to move anything from a product perspective, or you're going to move anything from a digital perspective, it's most likely going to come through Illinois. That was something we promoted that you can't, again, put an economic number around to say, well, your logistics cost is going to be so much better or whatever, but it's an intangible asset.
There's a movement in Springfield that may not come to pass in the veto session, but the talks are going to at least get started there to reconsider the state's economic development efforts, perhaps to lengthen the EDGE tax credit period from 10 to, I think, to 20 years. What do you think of that idea?
I'm fully supportive of the idea. I think it's, an additional tool that the individuals that are marketing our state to companies that are looking to locate here. I think it should be used for companies looking to expand or to locate here. I do not think it should be used as it has in previous administrations, be used as a defensive tool to keep a company from moving out of state. I think that those kind of threats are not a good use of taxpayer money. But to your point, I think any additional incentives that we can create to bring companies to Illinois or to expand within Illinois, we should be looking at.
Are there other tools the state should look at?
I'm a big fan of the Enterprise Zone Tax Credit. I think that's an important tool as well. I think we ought to increase the workforce training dollars. I think we ought to increase the amount of investment in community colleges and more from a technical training perspective. There are several community colleges that are doing a great job of working with their local ecosystem to train individuals to have better skills to work within that environment.
Jim Schultz was the Director of Commerce and Economic Opportunity in the Rauner administration. He now heads a private equity fund called Open Prairie that invests across the ag value chain. Bloomington Normal is a finalist along with another state for Samsung. Crane Chicago Business reports that state is Ohio. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.